This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. On today's show, lawmakers filed a bipartisan proposal to repeal HB 2, but it has some conditions. Since the bill was filed, more than a dozen other representatives have signed on as co-sponsors, mostly Republicans. While a few Democrats have signed on, the proposal has not met with widespread acceptance. Many Democrats and LGBT rights groups say this repeal measure does not undo all of the discriminatory damage of HB 2, and it's not clear whether it has support in the Senate. Here to tell us more about that and other activities is Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
All right, more details on this so-called bipartisan proposal.
This is the first bipartisan proposal that we have seen in the efforts to potentially repeal or significantly alter HB 2. There was a plan or a pact that fell apart in December, and that fell apart for a number of different reasons, perhaps all of which we will not ever fully comprehend and know. But they're taking another crack at it here. Republican Chuck McGrady is the one who is leading this effort. This bill would, in the first lines of the bill, says that it would repeal HB 2. What it would then do is give the state authority over all multi-stall bathrooms moving forward. Then, if any municipality, be that Durham or Wilmington or Asheville, wanted to pass a non-discrimination ordinance or protection of its own, not, it can't deal with multi-stall bathrooms, but something else, whether that's an employment protection or some sort of symbolic or protection with teeth, they would have to give the legislature a 30-day notice to say, hey, we, X city, we will be passing this in 30 days. Then, if the city adopted it in 30 days, there would be a, stick with me here, a 90-day enactment window, a three-month window. So Durham or Wilmington or Asheville, whatever, would say, all right, it's April 1st. We passed this local ordinance. It's going to take effect in 90 days, so about July 1st. During that time, opponents of this measure could go out and get signatures. And if they got enough signatures, it would not go into effect. So any effort to protect the LGBT community, and there certainly would be others, but that's obviously the most obvious one. The local ordinance wouldn't take effect. It would go to the next election and be a voter referendum.
Wow. So, wow, that's a long process.
Yes,
interesting. Curious to know what would happen if there was a referendum on HB 2 right now. Could go down in one night. If there's, given the unpopularity, the last polls show there's a majority that doesn't support.
To that point, a Civitas poll, a conservative poll, said 55% of North Carolinians recently would like to see repeal.
That'd be interesting if there's a referendum on HB 2. But this would allow for referenda, and therein lies the sticking point, or at least one of the sticking points for critics of this repeal measure.
Yeah, and what's interesting at this point is it's such a polarizing, divided time. This is a bill that is more moderate, that comes toward the middle. The hard right-liners, no thank you. The progressives and the more liberal members, and there aren't that many, but those in the North Carolina House have said this is a non-starter. We're not going to put on the ballot civil – and they're calling it civil rights. So this would take a bipartisan – effort to get through. I talked to one Republican staffer yesterday, and he laid it out as at this point there's a block of voters, maybe as many as 30 Republicans in the North Carolina House, and it's not clear yet how they're going to vote on this, because it's politics, right? If you have a conservative district and you vote to repeal this divisive measure, you might see a primary challenge a year from now.
Right.
So that's one thing they're thinking about. And if it gets through the House, how does this fare in the more conservative Senate? Would it even come up for a vote? And then we've got the governor, who has already expressed concerns over this proposal. Would he potentially, Roy Cooper, veto it? I think the big piece for listeners and for us to keep an eye on is what, if anything, the NCAA, the ACC, Deutsche Bank, PayPal, some of these bigger international corporations that have been very outspoken against House Bill 2, what, if anything, they have to say in the days and weeks to come.
Yeah, we've seen some support in the business community in the state of North Carolina saying that they like this proposal. Now, the Republicans have dug themselves a huge hole by this discriminatory legislation. They passed it in a day. There was no scrutiny. There was no accountability. They just did it. And now they're having to reap the whirlwind. They'd like to get Democratic support, but ultimately, Jeff, it comes down to a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate that has control over whether or not HB 2 is repealed and business environment improves in North Carolina, right?
It's an important note, and it's not to hammer anybody unfairly. Republicans have super majorities in both chambers. So for the last 5 years, if there's something they want to get through, they've been able to get it through. But this obviously points to the divide within the Republican caucus over this ongoing controversial bathroom legislation.
All right. Well, let's talk about some other issues here that the legislature has taken up. Heated exchanges in a Senate committee as Secretary of Military and Veterans Affairs Larry Hall, for the third time, did not show up for his confirmation hearing. Why not?
Well, the General Assembly passed a law back in December. This was during another one-day special session. This dealt with separation of powers, and after it was determined that Republican Pat McCrory would be leaving the executive mansion and Democrat Roy Cooper was coming in, the General Assembly moved to strip some of the executive powers, alter, shift some of the executive powers, use whatever word you most prefer. And one of those mandated a state Senate confirmation hearing process for 10 of the executive cabinet members. There have been lawsuits filed over this by the governor. It is playing out in court. A three-judge panel has ruled in part on this. And to be clear, Senator Berger said yesterday that there are various ways you can look at this piece of at this ruling from the three-judge panel, which just the whole thing's confusing.
It's confusing, but it does mean that the final court judgment on the legality of the hearing process hasn't been made yet.
No.
And so the Democrats are essentially saying, look, we've got to run a government. We'll wait for the courts to rule on this. In the meantime, here are my appointees. I'm going to go. And we're not sure that your process is legal.
Republicans are saying we, in fact, can move forward with this.
We can move forward. And here are the hearings. Show up, Larry. And Larry doesn't show up. So here's Phil Berger talking about why he thinks that Larry Hall and others should show up for the hearing process that is still in the course. Senator Phil Berger, who is, of course, the senator who leads the Republican majority in the Senate.
Transparency in government is a good thing. Giving the people of this state an opportunity to learn about unelected department heads who will control billions of their tax dollars is not something anyone should be fighting. Nor should it be controversial that public officials must, like everyone else, follow the law. It is mind-boggling that this is even considered controversial and that the governor is fighting back so hard.
Now, as we hear him read that statement, it has to be said he's fairly new to this concept of transparency since they didn't have this process for the 4 years a Republican governor was in place.
Well, it's politics. So whether the Republicans or the Democrats are in power, the goalposts are constantly shifting, right? I mean, that's what this is about. And this is about power. There is no longer a Republican serving at the bully pulpit of North Carolina. There's a Democrat there. And Republicans want to flex their muscles, so to speak.
Democratic Senator Floyd McKissick pushed back against Phil Berger.
It's about power. It's a pure power play. It's the Republican majority who at this point in time are trying to establish their rank and superiority over Governor Cooper and try to make certain that they can hold him accountable, bring him in here, bring his appointees in here, even those pending litigation dealing with these issues.
All right, that's Democratic Senator Floyd McKissick on Larry Hall's confirmation hearing. So where are we, Larry Hall?
They issued a subpoena yesterday. I guess we didn't address
that.
I should have said that. Sorry, it was bouncing around in my head. So the legislators gave Larry Hall, from their perspective, three opportunities to show up and answer questions about if he has conflicts of interest, if he can do this role, if he will obey the law. Mr. Hall, who we should note is a former House representative from Durham, has not shown up. So they issued a subpoena. This is a rare step. They don't just dole these things out at the General Assembly. They haven't done it in 6 years. So it's political theater. It is ramping up this game of chicken. And Larry Hall is expected to be there next week. We'll see if he shows up or if the governor moves to stop somehow this subpoena.
Meanwhile, he's in the job. He's been sworn in.
Yes, he's been in the job and he's getting paid to do the job.
Yeah. And so all of this is really kind of tying up state government. And we're going to try to figure out how we can move forward pending the litigation on that. Well, listen, speaking of judges and the judiciary, a final this week, a bill advanced that would make judicial races partisan. Tell us more about that.
Yes, that moved through the House by a 65-51 vote. So a relatively close vote in the House. All the Democrats voted against it. They were joined by six Republicans. Superior and district court judgeships under this bill would become partisan, and candidates would have to declare an R or a D next to his or her name. Now, move through the House, has to go through the Senate. Not entirely clear at this point how much support there is there for those folks. This is part of a broader effort by Republicans to make judgeship races, make judicial races partisan. They did it with the State Court of Appeals last year. It was to their advantage. Republicans of the 15 judges, appellate judges in North Carolina, Republicans hold 10 of those seats. And we should note that last year on the ballot, there was a pretty big race between Edmonds and Morgan. Bob Edmonds, the incumbent in the North Carolina Supreme Court, and Mike Morgan, the challenger. There was no R or D next to those names. And on a night when Republicans really carried November 8th, right, it was the Democrat Morgan who won the swing seventh seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court. So Republicans believe recent history shows them that this is to their advantage, and that's part of the reason they're doing it.
And it has not always been this. We now have nonpartisan elections, but we've had partisan elections in the state before.
That's right. So Superior and District judge races went from partisan to nonpartisan under Democratic leadership in 1996. That was for the Superior Court judges and District Court judges in 2001. And now we're seeing perhaps the transfer back the other way. It's in motion.
All right. We will stay tuned. Thank you very much, WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tubiri. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Just ahead, a dance show explores the historical and cultural roots of childhood games. We'll hear about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.